Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on all of the insanity that's going on everywhere. As we document the decline and fall of Western civilization happening right before our eyes, as predicted here on this show over the past 20 years or so. So all the bad stuff that we've been warning you people about is actually occurring. We go to Portland. The insurrection file, where Breitbart reports protesters at the Justice Center in the federal courthouse lit fires and burned American flags and Bibles in the street. Hey, Breitbart writers, protesters don't start fires in the middle of the street. That's rioters. But Breitbart has been penetrated by the urinalists. They all went to the same urinalism schools, and they're not really all that conservative. So why are they burning the Bible? If Black Lives Matter, why would they burn the Bible? Well, we'll get back to that, okay? Police in Portland, according to reports, did not engage with the demonstrators. They were demonstrating how to light a large bonfire in the middle of the street, in front of the federal courthouse. They're demonstrators demonstrating. Yeah. There was a shooting on Friday night where over 150 rounds were fired. One struck a woman in the arm. She will recover, but she will not be okay. And bullets struck at least 8 occupied apartments and 7 vehicles. That was a demonstration of how to fire randomly downtown. That's what... As if we needed a demonstration of all that. So the insurrection continues. The government seems just hapless, unable to respond. Completely impotent, castrated. It's embarrassing. And now we have, from the Reality Bites file, we have radio host Paul Gallant, who's a radio host in Seattle, which means he's probably a liberal pothead. Smells of damp denim. No, it wasn't denim, was it? It was plaid, yeah. Damp plaid corduroy and marijuana smoke. Anyway, I'm trying to remember. I think that was Portland, where I said Portland smelled like faded plaid and pot smoke. But I think Seattle's about the same. Anyway, Seattle is that goofy striped shirt that heroin addict who announced the end of rock and roll. Everyone who said rock and roll will never die never met Kurt Cobain. Anyway, from Reality Bites, this pothead liberal talk show host, Paul Gallant, whatever, he posted up on social media last month making fun of conservatives who were saying there were violent riots happening in the streets of Seattle. He posted up, "I walked through Seattle last night, dude, out of curiosity, and I saw no burning, no pillaging, or deaths. Chill, dog." Gallant added sarcastically in his social media post. Well, last week, his apartment complex was vandalized and the Starbucks on the first floor was set on fire. And then suddenly that changed his attitude. He posted up, "I feel like I need to buy a firearm because clearly this is going to keep happening. Enough is enough," he said, as the first floor of his building was lit on fire. Now, fortunately, the firefighters came and put it out before it burned him to death, which it could have. But other people have not been so lucky. The people who've been killed in the rioting that Mr. Gallant made fun of. All right. So there you go. You know, it makes me want to, you know what this makes me want to do? It makes me want to give you all an update on the duckling situation here at the McBurney compound. Yes, 5 of 5 ducklings are still alive. And they're growing quite rapidly. They now have their own run, and they even have their own custom-made above-ground pool. Now, my extremely attractive audio engineer, who's here with me, is not a fan of above-ground pools, except in the case of ducklings. They're allowed to have an above-ground pool. And they have a deeper container than we've had with previous duck experiences. And so the ducks can do a deep dive now, and they're digging it big time. They love it. They're just doing great. So the bird whisperer's taking good care of them. And Daddy Duck, the lone surviving duck from the previous generation, he's getting along with the ducklings quite nicely, surprisingly. Yeah, he's acting like a daddy duck, although daddy ducks can be a bit, it can be precarious from what we have read. Daddy ducks can have a tendency to attack the ducklings because they feel that their place in the pecking order is threatened, but there is no pecking order anymore. There was only one pack left. That was the daddy duck. So I think he's happy to just have company. You hang around with the ducklings while the country burns to the ground. They're ignorance is bliss. They're happy. All right. Let's see. So I'll get back to more bird news as we move on. But we want to check in quickly on the degenerate file, where it turns out, shock of all shocks, the head writer and executive producer of the Ellen DeGeneres Show turns out to be a homo pervert. What? Yeah, I know. It's shocking. 36 former employees, many of whom have now corroborated incidents of misconduct, harassment, and outright assault. That's right. And they all declined to be identified for fears of retribution because at the moment, Ellen DeGeneres is one of the most powerful people in television, but she's about to lose all that, I hope. It couldn't happen to a nicer person. I'll post a link to this article from page 6 of the New York Post, but I've got to warn you. Some of the things executive producer Kevin Lehman, the homo pervert, did are, they're hard to read. And I'm kind of surprised that things like this can be published in a newspaper. I didn't know you could say things like this or print things like this. I just didn't know that. Standards must have changed. I have noticed with the profanity. Newspapers and websites no longer bleep out the profanity. They just leave it in there. They just leave it. In fact, that reminds me, speaking of profanity, how's my time? I'm good. So I'm walking down the street in Whitefish, Montana. Whitefish, Montana, I said, where everyone is wearing masks and look like they're with Antifa. So oddly enough, I should have checked before we went to air about how many people have died in Montana from COVID-19. I believe it's under 100. It might be under 10. I'm not sure. It's very few. But the governor has everyone masked up out there. And so I was walking from my hotel to a sandwich shop. And I had to walk through bustling downtown Whitefish, Montana, which consists of 4 streetlights. So this is a relatively rural town in a relatively conservative state? I guess not anymore. They elected a Democrat. They may have erected him and then elected him. He may be fake. He might just be a cardboard cutout of a human. I don't even know his name. But anyway, before I got on the plane to go to Montana, I wanted to know if I would have to wear a mask. So I just Googled governor of Montana. And when I saw the D next to his name, I thought, okay, yeah, I'll have to wear a mask. And sure enough, had to wear a mask. But I come to the street corner where there is a Black Lives Matter protest going on, consisting of 4 or 5 skinny white kids and 1 lesbian, 1 old, very unattractive lesbian, clipped haired, the clenched teeth type with the bulging veins in the neck. You know the type, right? And they have signs that have F this and F that writ large. And they're holding up signs with the F word on them on a Friday afternoon in Whitefish, Montana. And so I would have thought that was a crime, that you couldn't do that. I don't know what I think you could. It could just be disorderly conduct. But it's apparently they're immune from not only prosecution, from even being asked by the police to please not hold up signs saying the F word for everyone to see. So I took it upon myself to tell them. So I walked up to one of the pale, skinny white kids. And I said, do you think it's right to be holding a sign that little kids and everybody can see with this profanity and vulgarity on it? At which point he said, F you, F this, F that, F, 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 F.
Very smart.
And I said, yeah, you have a very impressive vocabulary. Your mother must be really proud of you. And I told the little group, because then they all came around me, right, as if they could threaten me, as if they could make me scared. And I just stood my ground and I said, you know what, you little punks? I said, you just keep pushing. You just keep pushing with this. And American veterans, black and white, we will rise up and we will kill you. At which point they all started screaming, F you, F racist, F, 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 F. And I just louder and louder and louder just kept saying, we will kill you. We will kill you. And then I walked and got my sandwich. And so this is the America we live in now, where even in a rural town full of seemingly normal people, an insurrection is allowed to happen on a street corner where punks are exposing little children to some of the worst profanity and vulgarity known to man. That's the state of masculinity in America, that someone doesn't stop their car, get out, and give those kids a spanking, which is what they needed. But had I spanked them, I may have never made it home. I'd probably still be in jail in Montana. All right, so do we have any more on Ellen DeGenerate from the Degenerate File? No, that's it. Her producer is a homo pervert, and Ellen is a homo pervert. So it's not shocking that everything associated with her show was fake, phony, fake. And she's really a mean, nasty, rotten human being who treats people with no respect because she has no respect for humanity because she's already defiled herself and everyone in her immediate circle. Now, speaking of defilement, let's go to Netflix where The Federalist reports on the queering of America. The author for The Federalist writes, when the left decides the American public needs to be properly educated on any given subject, there is nowhere to hide from their propaganda. The latest is an effort to make regular people feel bad about unknowingly traumatizing transgender people. Netflix has a writer named Rose Damou, who is a transgender woman, meaning he is a man. And just don't get confused. Try to follow me on this. And they posted on social media that they're doing a reboot of The Babysitter's Club. A reboot, I said. Are you familiar with The Babysitter's Club? He asked, his extremely attractive audio engineer. I didn't know there was a Babysitter's Club, but apparently it's being rebooted and it's being transgendified. Yes, Marianne is a preteen girl who finds herself babysitting a transgender child. The child's name is Bailey. And Bailey is actually a boy, but likes to think he's a girl because his parents are perverts and freaks and mentally deranged child abusers. I put that in. That wasn't part of the story. Bailey knows who she is and has supportive parents who trust their daughter and want her to be happy. When Bailey comes down with a fever and has to be taken to the emergency room, the nurse and the doctor refer to Bailey using male pronouns. Well, Marianne, the babysitter, takes the medical staff outside of the room to educate them on the proper way to interact with Bailey, the transgender child. She argues that if the doctor and the nurse would simply look at Bailey and not his chart, they would see Bailey is not a boy. And later on in the episode, the devastated doctors and nurses all apologize to the transgendered child. It's the queering of America, ladies and gentlemen. And I disagree with the author of The Federalist that when the left decides that we need to be properly educated, there is nowhere to hide. There is somewhere to hide. Just don't subscribe to Netflix and don't watch that crap and keep your children out of the government schools. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. It's good to be back. Thanks for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for not changing that dial. Don't touch that dial. Oh, there's no dial. Don't touch the dial on your iPad, even or your iPod, it was. Even iPods don't have a dial anymore. They used to have a dial. Anyway, podcasting is a much better way to do all of this. It's a much better way. I enjoy podcasts myself. I have a few that I've subscribed to. And I suggest you subscribe to this one, although I don't really care because I don't make any money from it. It's just my way of avoiding beating people about the head and shoulders every week. I just get to vent it all out because it builds up, you know. Especially, you know, I've been on, I just did a quick review. I've been on 12 different airline flights since the panic of 2020 kicked off. Back in February of this year, back when everybody started freaking out about this virus, I've been on 12 airplane flights. How I haven't caught this virus is beyond me, because I don't wear a mask. I do the old chin strap, just put it around my chin, and so anyway, I don't want to be tested. I don't want to know. I'd rather not know. I don't want to be contact traced. But anyway, I've been on a lot of airline flights, and so. When you get on an airline flight, as soon as you walk into the airport, that loudspeaker that normally says, don't let anyone put a bomb in your luggage, it now says, wear a mask, wear a mask, wear a mask. You have to have a mask. It's for the safety of everyone. It's for the safety of our passengers and our crew and everyone in the airport, wear a mask. Wear a mask. Anyway, I have not worn a mask in any airport, not once, and I've only been hassled once by a little homo flight attendant, male stewardess. And anyway, I just barked at him that I have a medical condition. Makes me sound like Dr. Fauci. I can't wear the mask. All right. Anyway, where was I going with that? I don't know where I was going with that. I've been on too many airplanes, that's all. Oh, I know. you feel like... You really feel the oppression when you get on an airliner. You really feel it, I'll tell you that. I mean, it's like you might as well be on your hands and knees begging, thank you, sir, may I have another? Thank you, sir, may I have another? It's humiliating. All right, but let's go from there to things that are of much more concern, like the... the state of justice in America, or the devolving state of justice. Multiple officers were injured this past Thursday morning after gunfire erupted. Imagine that. There was probably a pistol that was laying in the gutter, and it just started going off. No, actually, what was happening is the police were trying to arrest a violent carjacking offender. During the arrest process, listen to the police report. Listen to how, speaking of humiliation, listen to how the police are made to write about violent encounters with maniacs. During the arrest process, the offender was able to fire multiple shots at arresting officers. Unquote. Yeah. Just very matter of fact. Hey, this happens all the time. Oh, the offender was able to fire multiple shots. Three officers and the alleged offender were wounded. All right. And then we have quotes here from the alderman who should probably be in prison. He's from the neighborhood, and now he's a governing official. He should probably be arrested for what he's allowed to happen in his neighborhood. All right. And now also, that's Chicago, by the way. I forget how many dozen were shot this weekend and how many died, but it's somewhere more than a dozen shot, somewhere less than 20 dead. But, you know, who's counting? If anybody's counting anymore in Chicago. But I'll tell you one guy who's dead in Chicago that got counted. This is from the death cult file, because I'm assuming the people running Chicago must be some sort of death cult, because only a death cult could be so efficient at inducing so much death. A violent death, by the way, a violent, painful death. Chicago Police Deputy Chief Dion Boyd. He was a 30-year veteran of the force. He was promoted in July to deputy chief. Less than 2 weeks after his promotion, he apparently committed suicide. He was found dead in an apparent suicide. He is a father of two sons, was found dead in his office last Tuesday morning, 57 years old. Kills himself. Now, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot shared her alleged sadness with platitudes after platitude after platitude in a statement that was released, and I'm not even going to get into it. But I will, Mayor Lori Lightfoot urged officers to speak up if they feel they are suffering and feel they are running out of options.
Oh my gosh. Is she kidding?
Like maybe support from the mayor, huh? Maybe they feel like they're running out of options. This is the same Herodian skank, deviant, who's calling for the defunding of police and standing up with a communist, Marxist, revolutionary insurrection against the police. Save your platitudes, Lori. Save them. Speaking of someone who should be arrested, her door should be kicked in. She should be dragged from her bed at 3 o'clock in the morning for what she's done. She should be put on trial for insurrection. And that day's coming, folks. That day is coming when these people are going to be arrested by the authorities. It's coming. God willing, it's coming. Because if it doesn't come, then they win. Okay, meanwhile, speaking of justice, or the lack thereof, a court has tossed out the death sentence of Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. Yeah, they're demanding a new penalty phase trial. Now, Dzhokhar still has multiple life sentences, which are not affected by the ruling, so it's not like he's going to get out of jail tomorrow, but he might. Because another judge might throw all the other stuff out because, you know, it's very offensive to convict someone of a crime. He's a minority, too. The death penalty, according to this judge, what's this judge's name? Judge Roger E. Thompson. Roger E. Thompson, the judge there, says that the death penalty was invalidated because the trial judge did not adequately screen jurors for pretrial bias. Yeah, okay. Tsarnaev is currently in the Supermax prison out in the state of Colorado. And Judge Rogery says that the trial judge, George O'Toole, was just an incompetent buffoon, apparently. He failed to ensure that jurors were untainted by pre-trial publicity. Pre-trial publicity? Does anybody remember what happened to Boston while these two terrorists were running around? The whole city was locked down. People were terrified in their homes that someone was going to throw a bomb through their window. And so the judge says that that colored people's opinions about how this terrorist should be punished. Well, yeah, it did. And it rightly should. The people who he threatened are the people who should punish him. But no, now this new judge, he wants the new death penalty trial possibly outside of Boston because nobody else was aware. You know, outside of Boston, this wasn't a very big story, I guess. All right. Anyway, what can you do? That's very disturbing. Equally disturbing, we go back to Seattle, where the decline and fall of the American experiment proceeds precipitously and in an accelerating fashion downward. Lerone Deshaun Charles, a 48-year-old Seattle resident, was taken into custody last Saturday night and charged with second-degree murder. He shot and killed Anthony Parker, a 49-year-old man, at around 4 o'clock in the morning on July 21st. The two got into an argument or some sort of confrontation, and Lerone Deshaun Charles' solution to the tension was to shoot and kill the other fellow. Lerone Deshaun Charles has a lengthy criminal record, including 6 previous felony convictions as an adult, 36 misdemeanors, and 6 juvenile felony convictions. In 1992, Lerone Deshaun Charles received a very creative sentence of 17 and a half years in prison for kidnapping and assaulting a 16-year-old girl who was walking home from school. Charles choked the 16-year-old girl until she passed out. He threw her into the trunk of his car. He tried to rape her, threatened to kill her, and finally pulled her out of the trunk, kicked her, beat her, slit her throat, and threw her into a dumpster, leaving her for dead. And for that, he was sentenced to 17 and a half years in prison, and he did not even serve the entire 17 and a half years, and now he's murdered someone. And whoever the judges were involved in the previous sentencings, they should all be arrested. They should stand trial right alongside Lerone Deshaun Charles for accessory to murder, is what should happen. But no, the judges will enjoy a fat and happy retirement. Actually, they might not. No, that might be taken away from them by the current insurrection and madness. The unfortunate thing is it will be taken away from the rest of us as well. So the people who deserve to be punished will be punished, but then also the people that the innocent will be tossed into the punishment with the guilty, unfortunately, because you cannot rob justice. You cannot deny the imposition of the death penalty. You merely redirect and amplify it against the innocent. It's the Weekly Worldview. And I had a hard time just not letting that one play all the way out. Gotta tell you. Standing out in the rain, he is. Oh, man. All right. Yeah. Well, the state of justice gives me the blues, that's all. And Stevie Ray, he knows how to play the blues. All right. Now, we're going to go to the feel-good story of the week from that rather depressing devolution into the justice file. We go to the widespread pushback file where the owners of Attila's Gym in New Jersey reopened this Saturday by kicking the wooden barricades authorities used to block their entrance. That's right. The state, the governor there, Phil Murphy, I don't think Phil did it himself because he's a pansy, but he ordered other men better than him to nail plywood up to block the owners of the gym. That's Ian Smith and his business partner, Frank. And so what did they do? They came and bashed it in and kicked it in and opened their gym in defiance of pansy governor Phil Murphy, who doesn't have the courage to go down and face Ian and Frank himself, because they beat him like a drum, is what they would do. All right. Anyway, the picture of these two guys kicking in the barricades is one of the greatest. It should win AP Photo of the Year. One of the most inspirational pictures I've ever seen. And so the Ian Smith, he posted a defiant message directed at Governor Phil Murphy on social media saying, "You will not trample our rights and you will not destroy our lives. We will not back down ever." And how do we know that Mr. Smith is a man of his word? Because he's already been thrown in jail over this. So he got out of jail, went and smashed the governor's barricades around his business. I want to go hang out with this guy. This guy could inspire me to actually go to a gym. I haven't seen the inside of a gym since 1987. But if I ever were going to go to a gym, it would be Ian and Frank's gym. Let's see. The gym owner's story, this is according to Fox News, has become a symbol of American business owners. Not just American business owners, just American men who've been cowed by these fairies and pansies who are all scared, and they want us to be scared. And if you're not scared and you're not cowering, they think you're mean. Oh, you're trying to act like a tough guy. No, I'm just trying to act like a normal human being, for crying out loud. Not being paralyzed in fear does not make you acting like a tough guy. Let's see here. What do we... Now, kicking in the barricades and then posting it with a message to the governor, that's acting like a tough guy. But it's probably because Ian Smith is actually a tough guy. That's right. They were both arrested on Monday after they defied a court order. So they got themselves out of jail and immediately went back and put themselves in a position to go right back to jail, which they're willing to do. And they want to go on trial. And I can't wait because they'll win. I can't wait. Well, that's if the communist agitators don't take over and purge all the judges who actually know right from wrong, the very few that are left. Let's see, authorities erected the barriers after he and others, oh, that's right. So the state earlier had changed the locks on their door to keep them out. So these two guys and a bunch of their friends simply removed the doors completely. These are big, strong men who aren't scared of the pansy governor and his fairy crew of homo twisted pervs enforcing unlawful orders. Claiming there's an emergency when there is no emergency. The only emergency is Attila's Gym is going to go bankrupt if they're not allowed to open their gym. And now that we know that the virus isn't nearly as bad, so by the way, I've been so suspicious and wondering what could be possibly happening since we've never seen a cold and flu season or a flu or a cold go into July, August now. It's just never been... It's never been witnessed before, but you know what I think it is? So in the 100 or so years that we've observed respiratory viruses through the lens of modern science, the incidence of cold diagnoses simply have not increased in July and August. And there's simple facts that are well established behind it. I don't need to go into all that. It's not as if we didn't know anything about respiratory viruses before all this happened. Although it's almost as if we decided to forget it all. But here's what I think is happening that we've never done before. We've simply never gone out and tested everybody for cold virus and cold virus antibodies before. We've never done it before. And so what I think we're finding out is, yes, cold viruses continue to infect some people through the summer. But they get weaker and they don't make anybody sick, or they make hardly anybody sick. But we've all had a cold in the summer, right? It's not completely unusual. We've just never obsessed about one particular pathogen before. And so why does it look like there's all these cases? It's because we're testing everybody. We're finding all these cases. But why are people not dying? And why are the death rates continuing to decline? Because these colds, in fact, I would assume that this particular pathogen that everyone's obsessed with being scared of is a lot weaker now than it was. And I hope my prediction comes true, although it won't matter, if by August the infection rate simply disappears. By the end of August, that was my prediction about 3 weeks ago to a medical doctor who was hiding out somewhere terrified of the virus. And he wanted me to watch a 30-minute video on some expert, and I said, you know what? It's not worth 30 minutes of my time, doc. You go ahead and obsess in the cabin there in the woods and hide. I'm getting on an airplane. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, we continue, in fact, on subject, trying to maintain a focus here, ladies and gentlemen, to the Grand Delusion File, where the Daily Wire reports that lawmakers who attended the funeral of late Representative John Lewis in Atlanta have been exempted from Washington, D.C.'s self-quarantine restrictions. That's right. There's an order there in D.C. from the tyrannical mayor that remains in effect until at least October 9th that anyone coming from a hot spot like Georgia, where the funeral was, anyone coming from one of these alleged hot spots, whatever that means, that means they're finding a lot of positive cases, but there aren't people dropping dead in the streets everywhere, but we're going to call it a hot spot. We're all going to freak out and stay afraid. We want you to be afraid, too. Put on your mask. So if you fly into D.C. from Georgia and you're a private citizen, a peon, a peasant, you're supposed to self-quarantine for 2 weeks. But if you're a high-powered Democrat and you go to John Lewis's funeral, you are exempted. Why? Don't ask why. Shut up. Now, the order itself is ludicrous and purely political because it has an exemption for anyone who travels on essential business, which that's how the mayor did this. He declared John Lewis's funeral essential business. So how would essential business avoid infection any more than non-essential, Mr. Mayor? You're so full of crap, your eyes are brown, and I'm not listening to you anymore. Somebody should kick the mayor's door in and advise the mayor, and I don't even know who the mayor is. It's probably a girl. I'm guessing it's a minority girl, although I suppose it doesn't matter. It's a leftist maniac. Someone should kick in her door and remind her that there is no emergency anymore. Not only are you no longer issuing orders, you're under arrest. So in the order itself, the mayor admits that she doesn't believe that this particular virus is as serious as she's letting on. Oh, I'll make an exception for the essential because essential people are magically protected. It's all so insane. It's all so insane. Meanwhile, from the awful file, we've got Anthony Fauci. He is, he's suggesting that we should all wear goggles now. Goggles, yes. He was asked in an interview by CBS if perhaps goggles would be appropriate, and he said, well, yeah, and now that I stop and think about it, I think they are appropriate, as a matter of fact. Goggles. So the fact that this idiot is able to Fauci on about goggles. I was on 6 flights in the past 3 weeks. The first 4 of them, I didn't see any face shields or goggles. But the last 2, after Fauci fouched about goggles, get him, wear goggles. After the Fauching, face shields everywhere. Everyone in the TSA now has to wear a face shield and a mask. And keep 6 feet apart. Keep your social distancing. If you can't social distance, wear a mask. And if you can social distance, well, you should wear a mask anyways. And if you have goggles or a face shield, wear them and try to keep 6 feet distance. And so we've got lemmings. People who are, you know what? I don't want to use any profanity, okay? But I get upset about this. And I'm going to get to why this is making me mad and why I feel like I'm justified in being mad. But I shouldn't be as mad as I am sometimes. I admit that. Sometimes I'm getting too angry. And I have to find a means of curbing that. And I found that I have to stop and pray for God to help me. Because I can't help myself. Now let's go back to Dr. Fauci from the awful file on ABC News. ABC News interviewer asked infectious disease director Anthony Fauci. That's pretty accurate. Oh, I'm sorry. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease director. But the way it's printed on my page, you could just read it infectious disease director Anthony Fauci if you didn't look up and see. Anyway, he says masks. The wearing of masks and other coverings, as we've just discussed, are going to not only protect against COVID-19, but also help protect us against influenza. So we may find a secondary benefit of all the lessons that we've learned over the past 6 months. Yes. So that's it. What I'm saying here is that come the fall, when it's flu season, it's masks forever, baby. And Anthony Fauci's on TV every other night. All the women are baking cookies with my face. They've fallen in love with me is what they're doing. I can't. I love it. I love it so. So when someone asks me, sir, do you have a mask? You know what I want to say? I want to say, go straight to hell. That's what I want to say. But I'm stopping now, and I'm asking God to help me so that I don't say, go straight to hell. They hand me the mask, I take the mask, and then I just, what I do is I just do an impression of Anthony Fauci in my head, you see, to make it all entertaining. So if you don't have goggles and you're not able to get your hands on a face shield, what I would suggest is if you have a couple of 50-cent pieces, put them over your eyes and then wrap duct tape around your head and make sure it's nice and tight. And then, you know, the virus could go in through your ears. So I want you to make sure the duct tape covers your ears. And then if you're breathing, you're definitely vulnerable to the virus. So I want you to continue with the duct tape around your mouth. Make sure that the 50-cent pieces are tight up against your eyes, your mouth, your ears. And then lastly but not least, the virus could invade through the nasal cavity. And so that duct tape needs to go around and over your nose and have a nice, firm, tight grip. And then when you pass out and fall on the floor, you'll no longer be vulnerable to infection by this terrible, horrible, awful virus. You're unbelievable. You're so unbelievable. You're unbelievable. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And I'm probably going to go a little bit long. Maybe not. Anyway, I got a guy's opinion here from Red State Magazine. The reason I'm going to read his opinion is because it agrees with mine. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so there. I'm just going to say it. That's why I'm reading this on my show, is because it agrees with my opinion. It's from the Mask Hysteria file. It says 5 reasons why masks are anything but harmless. Yeah. And he opens it up. This is classic. I wish I'd have written this. He opens it up. He says, I'll just ignore all the studies indicating that masks are ineffective. Okay. We're just not even going to look at those. We're not going to look at the CDC's own conclusions that there's no evidence that masks work against respiratory virus. We're just going to ignore all that. And for the sake of argument, we're going to assume that it's 100% certain to impede the transmission of the virus. That's what we're going to assume for the sake of argument. If that were the case, how could you possibly argue against wearing masks? I mean, if it saves one life, isn't it worth it?
It's so mean. You just try to act tough. You want everyone to think you're a big tough guy.
So how could you argue against wearing masks if they're 100% certain to impede at least some transmission of the virus? Well, number one, he says, wearing masks prolongs the amount of time the virus stays around by slowing down its infection rate without decreasing the number of people who ultimately have to get it before it fades away. So if you people remember the original scam by which certain extremely, extremely selfish wussies were cowed into agreeing to allow them to lock us in our house for 2 weeks was that we were going to flatten the curve. It was never that we were going to stop the virus, if you remember. Because that we all knew back then, before we all lost our minds, that you can't stop a respiratory virus. They run through the population, they kill the people they're going to kill, and eventually we either get a vaccine or we get immune. That's how it's worked for the past century or so. But we... So if it actually works, we're simply dragging this thing out. So that's number one. Number two, nothing that restricts your breathing during a heat wave is harmless. And then he brings up the Navy honor guard who passed out at John Lewis's funeral. It was like 100 degrees in Atlanta, and the guy had to wear a mask and stand at attention for 5 hours or however long these Democrats blathered on. He says if you need a scientific study showing that ventilation, cardiopulmonary exercise capacity, and comfort are reduced by surgical masks, here is a link. Click. If it's not just obvious to you that wearing a filthy anything on your mouth all day is not healthy, if that's just not obvious, well, here's a clinical study, and I'll post this up so that all of you who doubt the idea that wearing a filthy bandana on your face that you picked up off the floor of your car might not be healthy. Has anyone read the CDC's guidelines on how to wear a mask? It's like 13 paragraphs. You could never leave your house if you wore the mask properly, and you'd be spending about $100 a week on masks. Nobody's obeying the CDC's order, except the one is to cover your face. Cover your face.
Cover your face. Wear the mask. Come on. It's no big deal, right? I mean, come on. It's a minor inconvenience is what it is. You save people's lives. Wear a mask. Save a life.
Reason number two. That was reason number two. Where's reason number three? I seem to have lost reason number three. Oh, here it is. Everyone walking around wearing masks feeds the fear and panic over a virus that's less harmful to young and healthy people than the flu. Right? And I think we all know that now, but that doesn't matter because the facts no longer matter. This is all driven by emotion, fear, and politics. Fear, number one, people are wussies. What did I say? Fear, emotion. People have fallen in love with being wussies, and they never wanted to admit that they wussied out. So this must be terrible because I don't want to admit that I got scared and wussied out. So this delays our return to normalcy, which I doubt ever happens now. I don't see how we ever walk this back.
Especially since we now know from Dr. Fauci that the masks, they're also going to protect us against the flu. I'll be back in September to remind you about the flu and how horrible it is. In fact, we might decide to pick one particular strain of the seasonal flu this year, and we're just going to start a body count on it, just so I can keep going on the late night TV shows. The women they love me.
Reason number four why masks are anything but harmless. What deleterious results will follow from depriving people of emotionally connecting with each other via facial cues? And to me, this and the next reason are the most important, is the dehumanization that is occurring, that's being done, it's being inflicted upon us against all logic and science. and that's dangerous. And have you noticed that the riots have erupted and the police have been castrated in the midst of a time when everyone is denied the right to bear the image of their creator? The face that God gave you is being ordered to be covered up by atheist, pervert, heathen scum. Reason number five, and this is probably the most important reason why wearing masks is anything but harmless: you should never let anyone bully you into behaving irrationally. And the author goes on to quote Theodore Dalrymple, who you folks may not be familiar with. Theodore Dalrymple, I hadn't seen his name in so long, I had to go look him up. He's a British physician and author. He's a conservative. He's written 25 books cataloging the decline and fall of Western civilization, predicting so many of the catastrophes that we are all now suffering through. And here's what he said. Theodore Dalrymple, he's British. Did I mention that he's British? He's a good writer. He says, "Political correctness is communist propaganda writ small. In my study of communist societies, I came to the conclusion that the purpose of communist propaganda, i.e. political correctness, was not to persuade or convince, nor to inform, but to humiliate. And therefore, the less it corresponded to reality, the better. The less the propaganda corresponded to reality, the better. When people are forced to remain silent, when they're being told the most obvious lies, and then to repeat the lies themselves, they lose once and for all their sense of probity. To assent to obvious lies is to cooperate with evil, and in some small way to become evil oneself." Dalrymple's observation applies to engaging in absurd behavior. This is the author again. Dalrymple's brilliant observation applies to engaging in absurd behavior as well as repeating absurd lies, which is what we're all being forced to do with the masks. You read the mayor of D.C.'s order again for quarantine, and it's obviously a lie. And we're told just go along with it, because if we don't go along with it, they may never let us get back to normal. Well, folks, we ain't getting back to normal. I know my extremely attractive audio engineer hates the word ain't. But I sometimes fall back on my white trash roots. Folks, there ain't going to be no normal. Yeah, we're never going back to normal. The old world is lost. So when you lose a culture war, there are consequences, and we lost. And now the enemy is moving in and taking possession of the institutions that we lost to them. And this is how it's done. Finally, the author, where did I get this? Is from redstate.com, I do believe. Redstate.com, is that right? Yeah. He gives a bonus, an additional reason number six, a bonus reason. And his bonus reason is, please consider who's insisting that you wear the masks. Yeah. And then the Washington Post, the New York Times, Jerry Nadler, Eric Swalwell, Nancy Pelosi, the Reverend Fauci, Saint Fauci, Saint, he says Saint now, not a Reverend. So consider who's asking you to do this. The heathen filth who shake their fist in God's face and cheer the crowds in Seattle burning Bibles and American flags. That's who's asking you to wear the mask. So from there, because that's kind of depressing. Even though I agree, even though he agrees with my opinion, it's depressing to think about what's being done to us. But we go from there to the not-so-awful file, where there's a massive amount of testing going on in Mumbai, which is Bombay, India. And according to tests, over half the people living in the slums of Mumbai have already had the coronavirus. They tested about 7,000 randomly selected people, and almost 60% of them had virus antibodies. In Mumbai, by the way, almost half the population lives in slums. But oddly enough, deaths in the sprawling slum have not exploded. The Mumbai survey came a week after an antibody study commissioned by the government suggested that almost a quarter of the people in the capital of New Delhi, which would be 7.5 million people out of 20 million, have already had the virus. And the bodies are not stacking up because the virus just isn't as bad as it was. And like that. But we go back to the widespread panic file where UNZ.com, I'm not sure who this is. I believe it's a university. No, that would be .. .edu. I don't know who this is. Anyway, it's about Sweden and the fact that, yeah, Sweden had more deaths initially, but now there's almost none because the virus has run its course in Sweden. They're getting close to herd immunity. And meanwhile, whatever mitigation, idiotic, ridiculous mitigation efforts we make in the rest of the world, if whatever effect they have at all, just simply drag this whole thing out and whatever. All right. Let's see here. We say, and in Sweden, they say any recurrence of the infection in the fall or winter will not be the dreaded second wave, but a much weaker flu-like event that will not overwhelm the public health system and kill thousands of people. You remember that's what the wussies were all scared of, that we were going to, our hospitals would be overrun. But now they're obsessed with stopping the spread of this virus, which is insanity. And when you participate in insanity, you will eventually go insane. Which is why I don't like to wear the mask. I don't like to participate in delusionary, insane behavior. Because it perpetuates delusionary, insane behavior and threatens my own mental health. All right, now a real threat, folks, and something that's worthy of, well, I wouldn't say fear, but it's worthy of being concerned about. WLS in Chicago reports that a new video released by ISIS terrorists urged followers in America to begin a campaign of arson attacks. They go on to note that there was a time when Al-Qaeda urged its followers to use pickup trucks to plow into crowds, and then that happened. Al-Qaeda also urged jihadists to use knives and attack people with knives, which is happening right now and still occurs. And now there's this threat of arson attacks, encouraging followers, ISIS now encouraging followers to start fires for maximum damage and carnage. That's scary. Uh-huh. That's scary. Should we shut the country down and hide under our beds for fear of ISIS starting fires? No, we should take action. We should take action and seek out ISIS and kill them with extreme prejudice as often as possible and in all places possible. But that's genuinely scary. You want to hear something else that's pretty scary. This is from the Daily Caller. So you've seen the governors, the deviants and perverts, sodomites, freaks, creeps, weirdos, atheists, and godless scum painting Black Lives Matter on streets across the country, Washington, D.C., New York City being the most prominent among them. Well, this past Saturday, a group of pro-life students outside a Washington, D.C. Planned Parenthood murder clinic wrote on the street, Black Preborn Lives Matter, with chalk. They were arrested for writing Black Preborn Lives Matter on the street with chalk. So the battle lines are drawn. And it's clear why we can no longer get along, ladies and gentlemen. It's clear why one side is going to kill and destroy the other side. That's what's going to happen. It has to happen because that their side is already destroying and murdering our side. And they've been doing it for my entire life, legally. Under the guidance and funding of the same people who insist that we can't go to work and we have to wear our masks. So keep in mind who's asking you to do it. And keep in mind why. It's a lot more than a minor inconvenience for the health and safety of others. You know, I'm about sick of everyone's concern for my health and safety. I think I've already stated that. Am I repeating myself? I'm getting older. I tend to start repeating yourself. So let's focus where the rubber meets the road, ladies and gentlemen, right now. The domestic tranquility file. Because let's face it, what really matters to all of us the most is what happens daily in our family life. That's really what matters. Those of you who are so obsessed with Donald Trump that you can't stop posting on Facebook about Donald Trump, he really shouldn't occupy that much of your mental state because he's not that important to your life. So get over the obsession. Cut it out. From the domestic tranquility file, we go to Houston, Texas, where a Houston man beat his 2-year-old son to death. The child's mother told police that he lost his temper while potty training the boy. Antonio Hicks beat to death Antonio Hicks Jr., who died at a hospital in Houston last Saturday. What more can you say? Deeper into the dark domestic tranquility file, Sharon and her girlfriend Raina face capital murder charges in connection with the death of Shannon's son, Stetson. Officers were called in response to a 911 call saying a child was unresponsive. Stetson was transported to Cook Children's Medical Center and was pronounced dead 2 days later. Arrest affidavits detail how the two women beat and repeatedly hit the boy on his body and his head in the previous days. The medical examiner ruled that the cause of Stetson's death was blunt force injuries with complications and ruled his death a homicide. Shannon and her girlfriend Raina have been charged with capital murder. All right. So, try to end on a less than traumatically painful note. From the widespread pushback file, an online petition attacking certain brands at Trader Joe's as racist was signed by an extraordinary number of extremely selfish, insane people. Trader Joe's, it looked like they were going to cave. They said, look, this was all lighthearted and meant to be inclusive, but we recognize now that it may have been offensive and we're so sorry. And they went to get in the supine position and huddle and say, thank you, sir, may I have another? But then something happened. They stopped. And they said, you know what? We've seen the online petition, and frankly, we disagree that any of these labels are racist. We don't make decisions based on petitions. We make decisions based on what customers purchase. If we feel there is a need for a change, we will not hesitate to take action on that basis. But take your petition and shove it. Oh, no, they didn't actually say that, but that's pretty much what they said. They said, these products that offend you, they resonate with our customers and they sell. And these products will remain on our shelves. At which point the cancel culture realized they don't have the power to cancel anyone. And hopefully we can all wake up and just say, you know what? Just tell these brats to shut up. Tell them I don't care what you think. You don't want to shop at my store? You don't want to patronize my business? Get the hell out of here. How about that? Finally, from the New World Order file, Unsecretary General Antonio Guterres has released an unpolicy brief entitled COVID-19 in an Urban World. Yes, he's a lifelong socialist. He says now we're going to reset the way we live, interact, and rebuild. We're going to rebuild? Oh, that's right. They destroyed the world. We have to rebuild it. He says the pandemic response tackle, we need to, tackle inequalities and long-term development deficits and safeguard social cohesion, which is all socialist gobbledygook. That means he wants to take your liberty and lord his power over you. That's how you can, he says, we need to guarantee safe shelter, the safe shelter for all. We need to prioritize those who are the most vulnerable. We need emergency housing to those without homes. Strengthen the capacities of local government. We need deeper cooperation between local and national authorities. We need a master plan for a green revolution. New bike lanes. Yeah, uh-huh. And we need to improve mobility, safety, and air quality. We need to rebuild in a green fashion when the pandemic subsides. Note to Secretary General Guterres, the pandemic subsided back in April. Genius, stop lying to us about it. We no longer believe you. And we're no longer going to play along. You deviant, immoral, perverted, corrupt, thief, liar, murderer. Sorry, I don't need your help. I will somehow figure out inequalities and deficits and social cohesion myself. Thank you very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Real Science Radio, and AmericanRightToLife.com, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here on the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.